This is Jerry Sands. You're listening to H10 Hanshin Tigers English News.
You're listening to H10 Hanshin Tigers English News, where your passion for the first place Hanshin Tigers knows no limits. Little chuckle in there and you'll find out why later if you don't already know. Today is Tuesday, September the 7th, and this is episode 134. I'm your host, T-Ray, and with me in Honolulu is Sanjay. What's up? How's it going?
Aloha, brother T-Ray. This is indeed Sanjay from Honolulu. We're still September 6th, Labor Day, and everything is going very, very peachy.
Everyone, it's Sanjay's birthday today. So, yes, this is a great day in that respect as well. But as you're going to see, we had an incredible weekend that just passed, and we're hoping that the good times continue to roll. We have got a great show for you today as we talk about what is going on with our prized rookie. So strap in and join us for a great ride. Right now, it's time for the Rumors and News.
Rumors and News.
So we're going to start with a little bit of a recap of our import situation, particularly the guys down on the farm. And so I still don't know anything about Wei Yin Chen, except that you found, was it you that found that Instagram post about like his kids, his wife and kids are here now or something?
Yeah, I found that. And then you noticed that the location was Osaka or something like that.
Yeah, like Fukushima-ku in Osaka. Not that I'm trying to or planning to stalk him or anything, but it means that maybe he's not living with the rest of the import players. And that could be because he's already got Japanese ability. He's got a lot of experience living here, and maybe he doesn't need exactly what the other players need in the way of support. So interesting. But he's still in country. I guess he's just not able to play, and he hasn't even played on the farm. So there's really no news on him. We do have two other pitchers, though, down on the farm right now. Those would be John Edwards and Raul Alcantara, who got sent down, I think, between last episode and today. So he had a couple of tough outings in the bullpen. As you know, he was relegated to the bullpen because we were planning to use Fujinami in the rotation. And we'll talk about that real soon as well. But Alcantara did not really go particularly well, and our hitting was not going well either. And so we called up Mel Rojas Jr., pardon me, we called up Jeffrey Marte, who had been just waiting for his chance to be called up. So now we have three position players and two pitchers on the top squad, those of course being Joe Gunkel and Robert Suarez. So I don't know. I kind of feel like that's not the end of the merry-go-round for the import players, Sanjay. I feel like we could very well see Alcantara back up top, possibly Edwards as well, if he is doing well down on the farm. And Chen, man, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think he's coming back to play more this year. But any thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, unfortunately, I agree with you on Chen. I hope that he gets better, whatever it is that's ailing him, and that he can contribute in the future. But this year, he's done. Alcantara and Edwards, I mean, yeah, we could use more arms in the bullpen for sure. It's just the matter of the batting lineup being in such a slump that I don't think we can afford to send any of our import hitters down right now. So maybe when the other guys start pulling their weight, then we might have a little bit more of a merry-go-round.
Maybe, but that being said, you know, like there was all this excitement, and I know that the press got all excited because it's for the first time in Hanshin history, we've got three imports in the cleanup. Batting cleanup, and I mistakenly thought that last year we did it with the MBS Marte Bor Sands, but that was they were batting fourth, fifth, and sixth, not third, fourth, and fifth. So if you want to get technical with the cleanup, it was the first time in team history. So there you have it. But that only lasted like one game, and then I think one or two games, maybe I think one, and then Rojas started on the bench or Sands started on the bench, and it seems like right now there's only space for two of them in the starting lineup, unless you bench either Oyama or Sato. And we're going to get to Sato later, so we can talk that over a little bit more. But if they're only going to use two of them in the starting lineup, then I kind of don't necessarily see reason to keep three of them up on the top squad, unless we really feel like one of them is going to make that difference late in the game as a pinch hitter, which could happen, but I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe we could be better serviced by having an extra arm in the bullpen as far as the foreigners go.
Yeah, I have to agree with that assessment. And it, again, it depends on how the other players are doing as well, because I think you're right. It's two starters plus a pinch hitter out of the three of them for the most part.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the best we can do unless we go with a drastic solution for the Sato situation, which we'll talk about later in the show. Okay, let's continue with the rumors and news. And of course, we always want to talk about our boy Shin-chan, Shintaro Fujinami. Where is he now? He is on the top squad now. Last time that we talked, I think he was on the top squad and then got sent to the farm right away. Well, the opposite has happened now. So he pitched on the farm on the 26th of August, which was a few days after our last show. Went seven innings, allowed just five hits and one run. It was a solo home run, walked only one and struck out 12. So he got 12. Called up for, yeah. So he got called up for the following week. Man, it just seems like he excels on the farm and stinks on the top squad. And that trend kind of continues here. So he was called up, expected to start a game against the Dragons, but it got rained out. So he also got pushed to the bullpen because let's get right into the injuries then, because we've got some good news about Haruto Takahashi. At long last, my friend, he is scheduled to start Thursday's game against the Yakult Swallows at Koshien, making his 2021 debut.
Hooray! Welcome back, Haruto.
Yes, yes. I can't believe an oblique injury kept a man out that long, but it's been 6 months, man. It was really like the middle of February when he hurt his oblique. And yeah, finally he is back. You know, I noticed something interesting, and this is just kind of an aside that has nothing to do with Haruto, but four out of six Central League teams have a Takahashi.
That's okay. A good point. I was just noticing that the other day, too. I didn't realize it was four out of six, though.
No, but it's not just that. It's four out of six that have a pitcher named Takahashi, and they're all left-handed pitchers. So it's Haruto with us. It's Yuki with the Giants. It's Keiji, I think, with the Swallows. And it's Koya, I think, with the Carp. And I think they're all left-handed.
I think you're right, yeah.
Pretty crazy stuff. Anyhow, we welcome him back. And I think it is going to be a Takahashi showdown on Thursday, because I think KG is pitching for the Swallows on that date. So it will be interesting. Right. And then, as we mentioned last time, Kota Inoue is still out with the tibia injury, and he just kind of made a blanket statement to the press saying he was sorry that he got hurt and he's going to work hard to get back as soon as possible. But there was no talk about, like, you know, it's expected to take 6 weeks or 4 weeks, or, you know, he'll be back in 2022. There was no mention of any types of dates, so I don't know what to expect there. The good news, though, is I don't think we have any other real injuries to report, unless you've heard something that I haven't.
No, I have not. So that's good news, especially this late in the season. You'd think that people get banged up more.
Right. And I think a sign of the lack of injuries is the fact that our farm team now set a new NPB or a new Nigun farm record with 16 consecutive wins. I think they might have a tie in the middle of that, but 16 straight is the new gold standard, and it's going to keep going. Hopefully it'll stretch out on, I think they play the weekend against the Carp farm team, if I'm not mistaken, before they face the only real competitors in the Western League. It's basically Hanshin and the Hawks and trash right now. I hate to say it, but if you look at the records of the other farm teams, like, they're not playing to win. So there is a chance right now. The farm team is tied for first with the Hawks. And ironically, they actually are ahead by percentage points because of having more ties, which is something that I've been griping about nonstop about the top squad. And here it comes to benefit our farm team. But I still don't like it, honestly. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, I really agree.
Like, yeah. So
I like your solution, though, that you had about giving a half win credit to each side.
Yeah, I mean, that if you really don't want to go the way of Manfred, or go the way of the international baseball rules, which would be starting extra innings with runners on base already, then something's got to give, man, because you're rewarding the quote-unquote stronger teams for tying more, which just doesn't make sense. And I just kind of feel like, I mean, other sports, they put things into place so that teams are encouraged to try to win. whether it's putting more weight on regulation wins as compared to overtime wins or whatever in other sports, right? So there's got to be a little bit more of an incentive to get her done in nine innings or to actually decide a winner. So just my take. Anyhow, I've talked enough about that. Let's move on then to thanking some of our awesome patrons. And you can be the newest patron if you go to patreon.com/thehuntingtigers. I'm always trying to introduce new ideas to that page to get more interest and to get more benefits out to the real fans who have problems accessing, whether it's information or games or whatever it might be, trying to give you an or merchandise. Yeah, I'm trying to give more opportunity to you, the fans. And so head out there, check it out. If you have any requests for like, well, if you had this kind of tier, I'd join or whatever, let me know because I'm open to new ideas. That again is patreon.com/thehuntingtigers. So we want to thank Richard Guywitz. We want to thank Tom Zilla, who is the curator of the Being Kansai accounts on Twitter and on Instagram. William Schofield, join me at Koshien sometime, please, when this whole thing ends, the pandemic that is, because we're still having problems getting people from overseas to Koshien. But Sanjay, if you watch the games over the weekend, you can see that there were plenty of people at the ballpark.
I was surprised. It looked like the place was packed.
Yeah, it did. Well, I think maybe it's just because we're used to seeing it so empty. But anyways, yeah, William, looking forward to having you at the ballpark. Rick Silvers, he's been with us a long time. He's on the digital package. Michael Schulke is back. Good to have him back. Joe from Wakayama is the newest patron, pardon me. And also Doug, who gives big, big respect to T-Ray and Sanjay for making the podcast I'm always looking forward to. Oh, thanks. And a shout out to my little boy, Teo, who was born this year. Go Tigers! So we're recapping now, my good friend, games 94 through 105, which means actually it ends up being 104 because we had one rainout. That means though we're down to under 40 games left this season by the end of this. Well, we had said we were hoping for a 10-5 during this stretch, which I guess we could, if we made it 14 games instead of 15, we would say, well, worst case would be 9-5, but preferably 10-4. Did we get there, man?
Missed it by just a little bit.
Yeah, we did. Actually, it was not as bad as it may sound. We did have a nasty 4-game losing streak in there. Plus, we also had a loss, another loss. We had 5 losses, but we ended up 8-5-1 during this stretch, correct?
I believe so, which is really good. It's really outstanding given how we started.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Okay, so let's breeze through the how we started part because it just isn't fun. So we're going all the way back to the 24th of August where we're facing the Bay Stars. This is at Kyocera Dome. And we took them 8-2 thanks to home runs from Chikamoto in the first, Oyama in the fourth, and Rojas in the eighth. Aoyagi was great until the seventh inning. So he gets the win. It's a big 8-2 victory. Follow that up with the opposite, a real stinker. Masashi Ito not doing great. He gave up an RBI hit to the pitcher in the top of the second, a 3-run home run to rookie Shugo Maki in the top of the third. And then Saito was a mess in the fourth. The Tigers almost had as many stolen bases as they did hits. You know, the Bay Stars are they're a funny team because they don't steal bases, but they allow other teams to do it at will. So that's something that we need to exploit more. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Nakano has as many stolen bases as the entire Bay Stars team. I think we're almost like quadrupling them in stolen bases this season, or more than tripling them anyways.
Well, they are a bunch of large bodies on that team in that lineup.
Yeah. And they've got some real potent bats, but they certainly don't play the speed game. Well, anyways, so Shugo Maki became the first rookie in NPB history to hit for the cycle in this game, right? And I know that it was kind of sketch fielding that allowed for it, right?
Yeah.
Sato did not do a very good job on a couple of those balls, especially the final triple.
The triple, it was gifted to them.
If you're allowing Maki a triple, he's not a very swift guy, then there's a problem. So anyways, we're 1-1 in this series, but we finished things off well with a 9-3 victory. And that was started with a bang on a first pitch home run from Chikamoto. So 2 home runs in this series, pretty nice for him. Gunkel went 6+, and despite 2 errors, did a pretty good job. Not errors for him, mind you, for the team. Sands with a home run, Nakano with two RBI hits, and a whole lot more. 9-3 victory. So we take this series 2-1. That's to be expected. I mean, a little bit more would have been nice, like 2-0-1 or 3-0, but whatever. 2-1. I'll take that. I'll be happy with that. I would have been happier if the following series had yielded some results as opposed to nothing. So actually, I was away for the first couple games of this one. I didn't get to watch very much, but Yukinishi again going for win number 100. This is against the Hiroshima Carp in Hiroshima. Got a little bit of a lead. Rojas Jr. with a home run, and then there was an error by their first baseman, I think, by Matsuyama. So we had a 2-0 lead, but Nishi gave up 3 runs in the third and fourth combined, and we never caught up again. We lost this one 6-4. Follow that up by Shoki Murakami's second start of the season. His first one was terrible against the Lions way back in May. This one was also terrible. He gave up runs in all 3 innings that he pitched, a total of 5 runs against. He just got whacked around. He walked a couple. It looked like he was not able to pound the strike zone. He didn't have velocity. He didn't really mix up his pitches particularly well. So Rojas got us the lead with an RBI single. And then after that, we had a lot of chances the rest of the way, but just weren't able to pull even or get ahead despite that. And then Ogawa gave up a 2-run home run in the 6th to Hayashi, I believe it was. And that was the backbreaker. Again, we didn't have the lead other than that 1-0 lead, but we lost this one 7-6. And so as the score indicates, it was a close game and we did have chances to bring it in our favor, and we just couldn't. The following game, the 29th, we lost 5-0. Let's just say we had an error in the first inning that led to back-to-back home runs, where the inning should have ended with a 0. And that made it 3-0. And after that, they got a couple more runs. So 5-0 loss. The team struck out 16 times in this one. And you'd think, okay, well, did Sato get 16 at bats? No, he didn't. He only got 1 at bat, and it was a strike.
Ouch.
Yeah. Sorry, Teru. We love you. We really do. But with this loss and combined with a bit of Giants magic voodoo stuff, because they've got fewer games over 500 than we do, they still end up in first. And actually, the Swallows end up in second by a couple of percentage points. And so we're down to third place after this game. And so I'm kind of thankful for the timing of this podcast. I have yet to have to introduce us as your third place Hanshin Tigers, and I hope I don't have to the rest of the way.
You're here.
Yeah. So the losing ways continued actually the next, well, not the next day, but the next game against the Dragons. We lost this one 8-5. Aoyagi just got singled and doubled to death in the top of the third. And the Tigers tied things up in a huge way in the bottom of the fifth. They were down 5-0, by the way, at this point. But Umeno with an RBI double, Chikamoto with an RBI, Marte with a bases clearing RBI double. And so that made things really promising. We actually did kind of have a chance to take the lead in that inning and were unable to. And then Oyokawa got slaughtered in the 7th inning. So we lose this one 5-8. So it's a 4-game lose streak to end the month of August. And Sanjay, this is the team's first 4-game losing streak of the season. So going 100 games, this is game 100, going 100 games without, or, you know, and finally having that 4-game lose streak is not too bad.
It's pretty impressive, but the timing couldn't have been worse.
No, exactly. I think the saving grace here is that I don't think the Giants or the Swallows won on this day either, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe that's correct. And also, there's one more silver lining from this game is that we were able to put up 5 runs in an inning.
Yeah.
And that's an omen of things to come.
Yeah. I just kind of wonder, like, how are the Dragons able to all of a sudden score at will against us? Because they got 6-6 in a couple of games at Nagoya Dome against us, and then 8 in this one. And it's like, this is the worst hitting team in NPB, and we're supposedly a good pitching team, and we're playing in pitchers' parks. And how are they putting up so many runs? And I don't think they hit a single home run in any of those games. So they're just like, you know what I mean? Finding the openings and stuff. It's just unreal.
Well, it's that Vantolin Dome voodoo.
Yeah, and they brought it with them to Koshi, and at least for one day. The fortunate thing is that the streak ended when the calendar flipped. So September 1, we're facing the Dragons, and Masashi Ito, with a strong performance, he gave up a lead in the top of the fourth, and that was due to an error by our shortstop. But Marte tied it up with an RBI single, and then Kyoda, their shortstop, returned us the favor when he blew a chance at a double play and Oyama took advantage. He had a broken bat RBI single to right to give us the lead. And ultimately, that was the winner, 2-1 win. So we even this series at one apiece. And this is where our boy Shin-chan is supposed to come in. He was scheduled to start on September the 2nd to end this series. And he did not because the rains prevented that. And I don't know if that's mercifully or not, but we'll get into Fujinami during this final series that we're going to recap. And that would be against the Giants. So anyhow, this ends our stretch of how many games against the losers of the Central, against the non-playoff teams? We had like basically from the end of the Olympic break until now, or the start, the end of the Olympic break until now, it was all against the losers. And we went like 7-9, I think, in that stretch or something crazy. Like it was not good.
No, it wasn't.
So we're expecting then, oh, okay, now we're facing the Giants. So is it going to get even worse? Well, it certainly looked like it in every game in this series. It looked like, oh, okay, here we go again. We lost, right? Let's go through it though, little by little, and we can talk about the ups and the downs if you'd like. So Nishi comes to the mound again, looking for win number 100 again. And the Tigers provided him nothing through five innings, not a single hit, not a single base runner as support. And he struggled a little bit in those middle innings, giving up three runs. I think he managed to go six innings. So he got the QS.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally in the bottom of the sixth, Oyama sparks the first run with the first hit of the game for our team, and he scored that first run. And then in the bottom of the seventh, he knocked in a couple on an RBI double down the left field line. And then he was actually the he was one of the insurance runners runs on what was probably the hit of the series, because I think if this hit doesn't happen, the rest of the series doesn't go our way. Bases loaded, bottom of the seventh, Takumu Nakano is going up against a left-handed pitcher, I think Oi, I believe, and is working this count. Oi doesn't seem to have his control. I was like, dude, just take ball four if you can. Like, fight until you get that garbage pitch. And he got a garbage pitch, but what did he do with it, man?
He ripped it all the way to the right field wall.
Yeah, that thing almost cleared the fence right in the very corner, but it was a bases-clearing triple to give us then a 6-3 lead. And then Oyama knocks in one more run in the bottom of the eighth to give us a 7-3 win. But really, like, you look at the first half of this game and I was like, here we go again, Tigers against Giants, you know, Tigers come up, you know, they're impotent and they can't do anything. But the bottom half of the game, we managed to get some runs in against some relievers that basically owned us in the first half of the season. So that was a really good sign. It's also good to take that first win out of the Giants, take a little bit of pressure off of us. And I think this one, well, this one gave us hope at getting first place back, because that's we're still right. Not quite in first place, but really close. So the next day, this one was a real merry-go-round. Pardon me, not merry-go-round. It was a seesaw battle. Getting my amusement rides mixed up. In the top of the fourth, they got the first run of the game, and this was against Gunkel, yeah? Bottom of the fifth, Umeno with a two-run home run to give us the 2-1 lead. But then in the top of the seventh, this was, who was on the mound for us? I forgot. One of the relievers, right? Or was it Gunkel still? It was Gunkel.
Gunkel, yeah.
Yeah, he was still in. A two-run home run to Okamoto. And it was just a great piece of hitting. I mean, this guy, I don't like him by any means because he wears orange, but Okamoto is just hitting some ridiculous pitches and getting clear in the wall. And we seem to have his number at Koshien up until this point, but that number got reversed and he's got ours now. So this two-run home run puts them up 3-2. It's the bottom of the ninth now. Actually, we had a good chance against Nakagawa in the bottom of the eighth, right? And Marte hit into an inning-ending double play with the bases juice. And everybody thought Marte was going to do it, including me.
Me too, yeah.
And I wasn't like, Marte is one of these guys that is just like, okay, well, he's bailed us out so many times before and he's such a good hitter that I can't fault him. But that one really hurt. And it was like, okay, now we're going up against Thiago Vieira in the bottom of the ninth. This is a guy who had 32 straight mound appearances without giving up a run. Finally, that streak had ended against the Swallows on Thursday. And now we're Saturday night. So we're thinking, okay, he's going to start another streak. No guy, because Itohara battled like crazy to get a leadoff hit. I think it was like an 8-pitch at bat or 9-pitch at bat, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and he got his timing down on Vieira's 159 fastball, I think it was.
Well, doesn't he top out at 166 or something like that?
He tops out 166. I think that one was either 159 or 161. It was fast anyways. So and then Oyama comes up and man, the shivers down my spine are almost still there because that was just a crazy well hit ball. As soon as he hit that ball, he knew it was out. Everybody knew it was out. And 4-3 walk-off win again, coming back in the late rounds, just like we did the day before. Looks like we're down and out and we put the dagger in them. So the first two games go to Hanshin. We're back in first place and we need a tie or a win to hold on to first place through the rest of the weekend. And we're going into Sunday. And we're putting Akiyama on the mound, and they've got Mercedes on the mound. Well, Akiyama was shaky in the first two innings, or the first inning, actually. He gave up a two-run home run to Nakajima, and that was after another RBI single. So he just looked really bad. And they pulled him after two innings.
Yeah, he looked like he was throwing BP for the Giants hitters.
Yeah, yeah. Because even like the first out of the game that he got was on an outfield assist.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. So,
really, you know, I think that was his first and only out through five batters, like through those first three runs. Well, anyhow, he got pulled in the bottom of the second because we had a chance to score a run. When his turn came up to bat, we didn't get the runs. So we're down 3-0. Fujinami comes in the third. He was shaky for the first two innings, but managed to get through them. Or pardon me, for the third inning, he was shaky. Fourth inning, he was good. Fifth inning, he gave up a three-run home run to Okamoto. So again, I didn't understand this. Umeno called for the same pitch three times in a row, and Fujinami didn't shake him off. They got him, you know, they got him swinging on the first two, but they went to the well one too many times, and it burnt them bad. So now it's 6-0. I turned my TV off, man. I was like, okay, well, we pulled the comeback off twice this weekend. That, you know, you can't expect a third. Expect the third. So. Unbelievable, man. Well, anyways, this is what I've got to say, though. I think Fujinami is the unsung hero of this game. And I'll tell you why. Because he gave up the home run. The Giants got the huge lead. Hara got, you know, too comfortable saying, well, maybe we can rest our regulars. Sakamoto gets pulled. And as you and I probably know, the relief shortstops committed two errors in the latter half of the game, both of them extending our innings, giving us runs and allowing us to come back and tie this one in the sixth and seventh. So it was E6. And then we scored on a grounder to second for our first run of the game. Or no, the first run was scored on the E6, I think. Then we got one on a grounder to second. Then Hataguchi with an RBI. Then Rojas Jr. with an RBI. So that was four runs in the sixth. And then in the seventh, it was again a grounder to second that scored the first one. That was an Ito Hara grounder to second. And then Itoi with another pinch hit RBI double to tie things up. Ito Hara coming in all the way from first base. Man, I was just screaming at my TV, yelling at Ito Hara to run his butt off to get in for that tie game. I could not believe it. Anyways, so we had huge chances in the first, second, and fourth before this. We actually had some good chances, didn't score in any of those. And then in the ninth, we also had a chance to walk it off. Man, I could not believe it. We were so close. Like Uemoto, if he'd pushed his fly ball about 20 feet deeper, we would have scored on a sac fly. And then Chikamoto's, you know, the final at bat of the game with Chikamoto, very well hit ball, just happened to be right at center field. And so we definitely could have won this one, but we tied it 6-6, came back from 0-6 against the Giants to hold on to first and to send them packing. You know, with their tails, their Jabbit tails between their legs, 2-0-1 in this series.
That was so sweet. And you know what? Some of the commentators pointing out that Yano really showed his resolve in this one. That it wasn't like, oh, we took two from the Giants, so we can, you know, we'll give them one. You know, they kept fighting and clawing. And the first step was in yanking Akiyama after two innings, saying, we're serious. We mean business. We're going to go after this. And it showed the whole team that, you know, they weren't giving up. And it went on from there. And this is really, it was a thing of beauty.
So Yano has been saying most of the season, you know, we're winning with the whole, we're using the whole team to win these games. And he really showed that in this series a lot. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't hesitate to pull Akiyama. He brought in pinch hitters at the right time, pinch runners.
And let them in.
Yeah. And I've found it's just maybe a couple of little moves they made. I know last time we talked about using the better farm guys up on the top squad and maybe reducing the number of pinch runners. I feel like we have a better balance now of pinch runners and pinch hitters. We have guys that can come in and get us the hit that we need, right? We got Itoi, we got Haraguchi, Rojas has become, the bench starter, although I could probably see a case for him starting and Sans on the bench. But either way, if Sans would be the pinch hitter, that would also be a huge threat late in games. And we've also got like Onodera and a couple of other, like Kinami could get the hit or whatever. We've got a few more guys that probably have a chance to get us a hit late. And even Shimada showed us in that ninth inning, he got a pinch hit single, infield single, that, man, if their shortstop hadn't stopped it, that could have been ball game two. So,
yeah, that's right.
But I feel like there's good balance on the team right now as far as that goes. And so I'm pretty happy about that. The other interesting thing is that Hara just went absolutely nuts. I think it was, which game was it where he used like four pitchers in the same inning? Well, the starter was the first pitcher, but then he changed the pitcher three times in the same inning.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And the two middle guys only got two pitches apiece. Yeah, so I mean, like he just went all out. So I guess he's trying the whole like we're gonna win, you know, use everybody on the bench to win, and it didn't work for him. I'm just really happy that his plans backfired for once.
Because yeah, I agree.
Like everything that he does, like, yeah, you know what? It tends to work out for the team to win, and he gets praised for like, that was a great move. That was a bold move. But it's yeah, just like,
they put him on such a pedestal over there in the media.
Yeah. But I mean, baseball really is a game of inches. And, you know, like those couple of inches could make the difference between him looking like a genius and an idiot. And for once, he looks like an idiot, which is great. I have no problems with that at all. All right, my man. Well, we are now 58, 42, and 4 on the year after 104 games, which means we have 39 left on tap. We're a game and a half up on the Giants, and we're 3.5 up on the Swallows, which is almost the same as it was at the All-Star break. It's a half game closer with the Giants, and it's a full game further away from the Swallows. But it's more or less the same. I'd love to see us put a bit more distance between us and them before the next time we talk, man.
I agree totally. And I guess it starts with tonight, right?
It does, against the Swallows. And we'll talk predictions in a little bit, but let's go to some players of the month.
What you gonna do when your team needs you? You're gonna stand tall and hit it over the wall. You are the player of the month. The man, the myth, the tiger. Your player of the month.
And let me explain that we are going to actually talk about our players for July, August. They tend to do this at the start of the year, right? Where they do the March, April player of the month, or sometimes at the end, if October only has a couple of games, they'll do like a September, October. But we're doing it here because July was a half month of ball and so was August. And so I kind of thought we could smash the two together. And man, Sanjay, I think we talked about this a bit before. When you smash the two together, it becomes really hard because some guys were hot in July and terrible in August or vice versa. Some guys got playing time in July and not in August or vice versa. So, but let's try and do it anyways. Let's start with pitcher and who you got for us.
Well, so I looked at the two obvious choices. And to me, those are Akiyama and Aoyagi. And let me sort of explain my reasoning. So Akiyama was 2-1 in August, 1-0 in July. Combined, he was 3-1, and he had a 0.93 ERA in 29 innings pitched. Aoyagi was 2-0 in August. He was 1-0 in July. Combined, he had 33 innings pitched. He was 3-0 record-wise, but his ERA was 3.27. So I went with Akiyama, even though the recency bias of him having a horrible September is still fresh in my mind.
No, I'm with you on that as well. Actually, I was looking at all of our starters and our relievers and everyone in between. Even Suarez, it was at the start of July that he gave up like three runs in that one game. I was partly assisted by Baba, but anyways, his ERA on the whole does not look very good. So even Suarez can't get the nod. Iwazaki was pretty crumbly, back in July, but he is really good in August. So yeah, it was really hard to choose. I also go with Akiyama. So it was a hard month though for our pitchers, because like Nishi has been struggling like crazy. His ERA was in the fives for both months. Akira Niho was pretty awful as well. And the bullpen on the whole was pretty bad. Oyakawa had one bad outing, but that's enough to kill any reliever's ERA for a whole month. Alcantara, same situation. Gunkel did not really pitch a ton in July. So it was really tough. But there we go. We'll go with Akiyama. Okay, how about with the position players, with the fielders? Who's your hitter of the month for the top squad, man?
Yeah, so again, this one's a Jekyll and Hyde situation. As you alluded to at the beginning, some had good July, bad August, or played and didn't play. I guess, you know, honorable mention goes to Mel Rojas Jr. and to Takumu Nakano.
Mm-hmm.
But my vote goes to Chikamoto. And even though he only hit 232 in July, he hit 400 in August. And so the combined batting average still is at 322, which is nearly a half, you know, nearly 50 points better than Nakano, who was at 278. So I'm going with Chikamoto and all that he's done. His August carried his July.
Okay. That's very fair. And I love what Chikamoto's been doing. I'll say it a couple more times before season's end, especially if he keeps hitting well. At the start of the year, I predicted he would be the CL batting champion. And I think he's still got a decent shot at that, because I think he's like third or fourth right now in the rankings. So, but I'm going to go with somebody different. I'm actually going to go with Umeno. And this is a guy that I said, man, he's getting tired. It's time for him to get more rest. And I still kind of stand by that. But if you look at his overall numbers for July, August, his July was 273. His August was 255, which are both above his average for the season. Just one home run and nine RBI during that time. But again, his sales point is his RISP. And July, it wasn't great. It was 167. But August, it was a cool 417. So he was getting it done when we needed things to get done. I also noticed this is a guy that he is striking out a fair amount, but he brought down his strikeouts a little bit in those 2 months as well. And there was, well, I guess this is September, but there was one at bat where he just really hung in there when he needed to, fouled off pitches that he needed to. And I still think that he is the man. So I'm looking forward to a good, strong finish from him. And he is my hitter of the month for July, August.
Fair enough.
I kind of hope that this is going to be easier in September, because it's just a clean month of baseball. And we are just going to see who has the hot bat by month's end.
Well, I wouldn't mind if we had to difficulty choosing between four guys that hit 350.
Right, right. Well, speaking of guys that need to heat up a little bit, let's get into the hot topic.
Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hanshin Tigers English News. Hot topics. Hot topics.
So for those of you who are unaware, our dear rookie Teraki Sato is going through a major cold spell right now. He is 0 for his last 32 at-bats. At-bats, I should say. Not plate appearances, because he has had, I think, a walk or two in there. So he's still batting 255 on the year. But there's going to be a big problem here for us if he doesn't heat up and heat up soon. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like a home run every three games, but he definitely needs to be at least a threat in there. So looking at his numbers though, right now on the season, okay, he's batting 255. As I said, he's played in 104 games. So all games, and he's got 95 hits, 24 of those doubles, 23 of them home runs, which means that almost exactly half of his hits are extra base hits, 60 RBIs, an OPS of 803, on base percentage of 297. And here's the problem that many people are seeing. And I guess like it kind of is a problem. 20 walks to 149 strikeouts. He is on pace to shatter the record for strikeouts. And if you look at this streak, this hitless streak of his, as we said, he's 0 for his last 32. So he has got 22 strikeouts in those 32 at-bats, which means, well, that's two-thirds. Two-thirds of the at-bats are ending with him walking back to the dugout after a K. This is a guy that is in serious slump mode, and there are many possible solutions to how to either help him out of the slump or do something to help the team. So let's just kind of list off some of these options that the team has. And so if you want to throw in some options, you can. I'll start with the first one, and that is to farm the man. That's the most extreme one, is to send him down to the farm for some reconditioning. Maybe he hears from some different coaches down there that he hasn't heard from. He gets some practice against some slightly inferior pitching, and it's definitely a lower pressure situation. I don't know, man. I've kind of felt like when I look at his facial expression now, when he leaves the batter's box after those strikeouts, he looks like a defeated man, which is a little bit different than a month past when he was striking out and just walking back saying, it's okay, I'll get him next time.
Yeah, I have to agree that his demeanor is a lot less confident now compared to, you know, as you say, a month ago. Even during spring training, when he was striking out left and right, it didn't bother him that much. And now it seems like it's more of a weight on his shoulders. And it's also on the weight of the shoulders of the manager that's using him too. You know, what do? Do you keep penciling him in every game? Or, you know, you have to at some point bear some responsibility for that. And I think Yano's feeling it too.
Right. And it definitely becomes a game of, is it something that he can fix by mechanics or by advice? Or is it something he fixes by continuing to play or by not playing? Right. So yeah. That brings us to possible solution number two, which is keep him on the top squad and bench him. And I mean, like, not even use him as a pinch hitter, like maybe use him as a defensive replacement or whatever, but just keep him on the top squad so he can observe. He can make notes on the pitchers. He can talk to some of the top squad, other players and coaches, and just kind of improve himself in that way. What are your thoughts on that option, though?
I don't think that that's really helpful for him solving his issues. I think playing time is better than no playing time. So if it's between those two, I would say send him down.
Right. I would agree with that. I don't think that that is the best option, to just have him sit on the bench and fester away there. I don't know if he's the type that is going to learn a lot just from observing. So then the next option is one that was used for like four straight games there. The last game in Hiroshima and the two against the Dragons and the first one against the Giants, and that would be to use him as a pinch hitter. Any thoughts on that? I personally don't like it because I don't feel like one at bat is enough for him to get into a groove. And in all four of those games, he got the one at bat and he struck out. And that's not necessarily to say that, well, you see, I told you so. Look what happened in those four games. But I think even just looking at the type of player that he is, type of guy that he is, saying to him, like, hey, you get one shot. One shot to get out of this slump. You know what I mean? If he wasn't in the slump, I could see them doing it. If it was a matter of giving him rest or whatever, things like that. But when he is trying so hard to get out of this, I don't think this is the best solution. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. Using him as a pinch hitter is just not the correct use of your assets. And it's not putting him in a position to succeed, and it's not helping. I'm with you. I think he needs to know that he gets 3-4 bats a game. And it should be, you know, bat him number 8, bat him number 9. Or you can go the other extreme and say, take the Joe Maddon approach and put your slumping players at leadoff spots so they get more at-bats. Anything to get him more time than less.
So you just brought up my next option or interesting possibility. And I think this was verbalized by Kakefu, one of the kind of analysts, but also, of course, a former Tigers great, who said, put Sato down in the number 8 spot and give him a chance down there. Now, this is one of the reasons for doing so. Give him a chance to kind of train his eyes, because in the number 8 spot, especially in those first 2 or 3 at-bats when the pitcher is due up next, if the situation were we've got 2 outs here and Sato is due up and the pitcher is next, what are they going to do when they're pitching to Sato? They're going to pitch around him, right? Because any pitcher that gets burned by Sato, knowing they could have gotten the 3rd out from the pitcher, is going to look like an idiot, but it's going to give Sato a chance to stand up there in a realistic possible chance for him to do some damage, but also one where he's going to have to say, nope, they're probably not going to throw me strikes here, so I'm going to lay off. And he can just watch the pitches and be like, okay, he'll see them with a little bit more clarity because he's not going to have that pressure of, I've got to get the hit here. It's almost more of a situation like, I expect that they're not going to throw me anything, so I'm expecting that I can watch a few more pitches. And he can be a lot more selective in that spot in the order. What do you think about that?
I like that one a lot. That would be my solution, even before you read off any other options there might be. Plus, if the pitcher makes a mistake, then he can just tee off on it and feel better about life in general.
Right. And that's exactly it. I mean, he may get that one pitch that the pitcher misses or whatever, where he's trying to throw something outside and it doesn't get all the way outside or whatever it might be, right?
Yep.
So the other option is to keep things as is, which right now has him batting seventh. Although, of course, before the slump started, he was batting fifth. So keeping him a little bit higher in the order. I think that another option, though, is kind of the flip side of this one, which is to protect him a little bit better in the order. So you put a really good hitter behind him so that the other team's pitchers know, like, okay, well, we've got to try and get our out with Sato. We've got to make sure we don't want to have to face this next guy. So we got to do it right here. That might lead to him getting a few better pitches. Although I think maybe given the current situation, other teams' pitchers know that they don't have to throw strikes to get Sato out. And that's been a big problem. So I don't know what you think about just leaving things as is or protecting him better in the order. But what do you think?
I don't think that protecting him is really the point here. He doesn't need that. Pitchers don't fear him right now. Uh-huh. And so having a strong hitter behind is not going to change the way they approach him, in my opinion. Nor do they need to, really.
Right, right. Okay. So just a couple other side things or theories that other commentators have given, because everybody's given their opinion, right? Everybody is sure, the armchair manager. But Kanemoto-san, the former manager before Yano, said Sato needs to actually try to hit the pitches that he hasn't been able to hit. In other words, like he's going for the pitches he hasn't been able to hit, but the areas that he knows other teams' pitchers are going to attack. So if they're going to go high and tight on him, up and in, he's got to aim to hit those pitches. Because once he's able to get a hit or two on those pitches, they're going to have to change their strategy, which means they're going to have to throw him maybe hittable balls in other zones. So that was Kanemoto-san's idea. But somebody else said kind of the opposite, like he's got to lay off anything that is high in the zone. So I guess they're trying to say, like, so a lot of times the Japanese coaches will say, and this is probably true in America as well, I just don't follow closely enough there. Either choose a pitch that you're going to kind of wait on, or choose a particular part of the strike zone that you're going to wait on. Do one or the other, and your chances of success are greater. But what do you think about those kind of strategies?
There is something to be said for that. And it's true. I think even the US coaches do say that, you know, like give up half the plate and just concentrate on the other half or things of that nature, or you lay off the high pitch or lay off the low pitch, depending on what kind of pitcher you're dealing with. You know, if they only throw junk and it's going to go drop below the strike zone by the time it gets to you, then don't fall for them. And I think Sato has been doing a lot of that lately. He's mm-hmm. also been swinging at pitches that are obviously too high. So in this case, I'm not sure what the solution is. He can't give up both the low and the high pitches. So I read an interesting one just now from Yagi, the former god of pinch hitters.
Yep.
And he was saying that his center of gravity seems to have changed, and that he mm-hmm. used to be, or he is still on his heels a lot and holds the bat high. And when you're hitting in that way, then you can't catch up with the high pitches. And so he ends up swinging under them. And, you know, that he was saying that he should just kind of not stand so upright, not stand like leaning back so much, be more on your toes, almost crouch a little bit more and be ready for a quicker swing. I don't know if that's true. It's just probably somebody having to say something in order to fill up an article space or something like that. But anyway, that was today.
That's kind of the case with a lot of these articles. And I think, like, I mean, if they were better at giving hitting advice, they would be hitting coaches instead of writers, which is the same could be said of us, right? If we were any bit competent about baseball, we wouldn't be doing a podcast. We'd actually be on the field somewhere. Well, anyways, couple of things that we want to kind of sum up or talk about with Sato. One is he had a called third strike. I think it was Saturday against the Giants. That seemed really unfair, man. It seemed like that it was a full count, and I could see, I mean, he's desperate to get on base, right? And if he had been able to pull that walk off, it would have given him at least a little bit more confidence. Like, I laid off a bad pitch. He laid off what looked like a bad pitch to me, but he was called on strike three. And I felt like that did a lot of damage, man. The umpires, a couple of times, I felt like they really squeezed and really pinched our pitchers and our hitters against the Giants. I think in that 0-6 loss, or pardon me, when we were down 0-6, I felt like there were a couple of calls that definitely went their way. And I was like, wait a minute, you're giving them that strike and then you're not giving it our pitchers.
Yeah.
So
I remember that exact strikeout that you're talking about. Yeah, I felt the same way.
So then the final question I have for you, and this is kind of a prediction, but we'll do predictions for games later. When is Sato finally going to break out of this? Will it be against the Swallows? Will it be in the first game? Is he Chris Davis? Is he going to set a record in NPB for longest, which I don't even know how long the worst slump is, but like Chris Davis went, what, 0-53 with the Orioles a couple of years back?
I guess so. Yeah, I don't remember the exact number.
Is he going to get into that kind of territory, or is he going to snap out of it before he reaches, say, 40?
I'm going to say he snaps out before he reaches 40. I mean, he's too good to not do that. But I think that it would be helpful if Yano dropped him to eighth in the order and let him hit with, you know, less pressure.
Right. I'm going to say actually that he does it possibly even in his first at bat against Okugawa and the Swallows. I think he's going to do it pretty early on. I think it is going to be on Tuesday, today.
Today. So right. Okugawa's today, right?
Well, we'll know that before you even hear this podcast. And so this whole prediction part might be completely moot because he may have already snapped out of it. I certainly hope so. And so do you.
Exactly.
All right. Let's jump into some predictions then.
What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's going to happen? What's the record going to be?
See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 predictions. See the future? Yes, they can. Check it out. H10 predictions.
What's going to happen? What's the record going to be? What's
well, we just finished up basically the end of a completely neat three-game set, or what they call the card in Japanese. Three games against each team, because now things are getting a little bit random the rest of the way as we piece together the rest of the schedule. So from tonight, we have got three at home against the Swallows. And then after that, it gets a little bit weird. We go into Hiroshima for two straight at the start of the weekend, and we end the weekend with one in Yokohama. So a little bit of a long trip there between the 11th and 12th. Get a day off, then we get two at Jingu Stadium against the Swallows. Another day off, then we get two against the Dragons and one against the Giants. Those are all at Koshien. And that might be it before our next show, but just in case it's not, we will also be heading into Nagoya Dome for three at the Dome of Doom, the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. So first of all, thoughts on this Swallows series. We just came off a 2-0-1 against the Giants, and I feel like sometimes we let down our guard or our adrenaline leaves the system after those big series. What do you think we're going to do, or what we should do, or what you hope we're going to do?
Well, I'm kind of with you, unfortunately, in that we do tend to suffer a little bit of a letdown after facing the Giants, using all our energy. At least we had a day off.
Right.
But, you know, obviously we'd like to win all three of them. But realistically, I will take a 2-1 against the Swallows.
So it is going to be for them. They've got Okugawa, their young and up-and-coming ace, who's not quite there yet, but is quite good. Tonight, and then tomorrow it's going to be Ryan Ogawa, who is good, but I personally think he's overrated. And then on Thursday it's going to be Keiji Takahashi, who has a good record against us, but he hasn't pitched very much this season. As for us, we are going with Aoyagi tonight, Masashi Ito on Wednesday, and then Haruto Takahashi making his debut on Thursday. So I'm thinking we should be able to win tonight. I definitely hope that we do with Aoyagi on the mound. And then between Ito and Haruto, if we can pull off one of two, I think we can pull off both. I think we can sweep this one, but I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for that to happen. I definitely would love for it to. But I'm going to say 2 out of 3 as well. Then we go into Hiroshima, where we were swept last time around. We lost all three. We've only got 2 this time. Do you think we're going to be able to take at least one, or what are your thoughts?
I'm expecting to split that 1-1.
So we've got probably Nishi on Friday and then Gunkel on Saturday would be my guess. And yeah, yeah, definitely Nishi... would be nice for Nishi to finally get that win number 100. Get that monkey off his back.
Yeah, really.
I can't believe it, man. He is 5 games below 500 on the year. And I know that the losses aren't all on him. So it's not like his performance is indicated well by his record. But the fact that the team is 16 over and he's 5 under is kind of amazing.
It is amazing. I agree with you. And how many tries has he had to hit number 100? 6 times already?
He's missed. I think 6. Yeah, yeah. So this will be try number 7, I believe. Yeah.
The 7th time is a charm.
Hope so, yeah. I thought the 3rd would be. But anyhow, then we've got the Bay Stars. And I think Imanaga started for them last Sunday. So I think it could be him versus Akiyama for us. Now, Akiyama should be well rested. And he should also have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder after what happened in his last outing, as we already recapped. So I'm looking forward to a win in Yokohama. And those two versus go together well for us. So I'm expecting a win there.
And it should be noted that it's actually an hour earlier start, 5 p.m.
Right, right. So for all of you who are watching this overseas, make sure that you set your alarms accordingly. Okay, then we've got 2 in Tokyo against the Swallows. So it's probably going to be the same matchups as we're seeing this week. I could see us taking 1 of 2 there. Maybe not both, but you never know. Those games are always wild, man. Jingu games, Tigers and Swallows are always wild.
Mm-hmm. Anything can happen.
Unpredictable. So let's just not predict. And then we've got 2 against the Dragons, 1 against the Giants at Koshien. I expect against the Dragons, we're either going to see, I forget what their pitching rotation order is, but we'll either see Yanagi or Ono. So it's going to be one tough outing in there. But at Koshien, we tend to do better against them. So I'm saying minimum 1 of 2, if not both. And then against the Giants, this is our final home game against them this season, this regular season, that is. So we'd love to end that with a win as well. So
that's
I'd like to see in these 11 games that we're playing here, I'd like to see us win 10. Realistically, though, in 11 games, if we go 7-4, I'll be pretty happy.
I was 7-4 as well in this stretch.
Yeah. So there you have it, folks. This is our predictions. And what do you think? We would love to hear any kind of comments or thoughts from you. And you can post those to Facebook or my Twitter or my Instagram. You can follow us on any of those. You can also go to Patreon, get some exciting benefits there. Go to the website where we are putting up recaps after every game. We've been good for 104, and I expect the last 39 will also be going up there as well. Just keep tuning into us. Keep coming back to this podcast. Man, we've got some exciting stuff coming up in the near future. I'm planning to have some more interviews with former players, maybe with current players if all goes well. So check all that stuff out. Special thanks to Anwar Amr for the theme music. And show for mixing the pod for us. Thanks again, Sanjay, for joining.
Thanks for having me, as always. It's been fun.
We'll check you guys out next time. Go Tigers.